special show today for the white folks. Hey, welcome to Clapper Action Radio. At the intersection of art, activism, and social change, that was the sounds of DJ Lady D, the queen of house music. Thank you for joining us on Clapper Action Radio on WCPT 820 AM, Chicago's progressive talk radio. But you already know that, don't you? We're also streaming live on Facebook and WCPT.com and YouTube, and we're available after the fact wherever you shop for your podcast, fruit and vegetables. While you're there, check out some of our previous shows. We've had some amazing stuff, and today we got more. I'm Anthony Mosley. I am the artistic director of Clapper Action Theater Company, an Emmy Award-winning theater for Chicago here, bringing people together, reminding us that we're all connected to each other, no matter how much melanin we have in our skin, how wrinkly we are, how fast we can run, jump, or eat buffalo wings. We are all part of the human race, and we have an exciting show today. If you're looking for a show that is important for white folks to listen to and think about, today is your show. On this episode, we are going to be talking to Rachelle Zola, who on Tuesday, April 2nd, that's in 3 days from now, she is going to be embarking on a 754-mile walk to Montgomery, Alabama for Black Lives, for racial equity. And she is not a black woman. She is white. So settle in and get comfy. And if you're listening, you can live, you can call in and join us today on the show, 773-763-WCPT. That's 773-763-9278. Rachelle is in the studio. She's going to come on shortly, and we're going to talk about what is she thinking? What is she doing? Where is she walking? But first, Clapper Action Radio is sponsored by the Joseph and Bessie Feinberg Foundation and donors and members like you. Email info@clapperaction.org to learn more, or go check out our website, clapperaction.org. We're also on Facebook, Instashmam, Tickery Tockery Do, and on X, but we don't do very well on X. I've never figured that one out. Never really wanted to have a long conversation with somebody 140 characters at a time when I could just text them. We're also sponsored by Ethos Collective, a purpose-driven destination and event management company that will delight your audiences and generate impactful outcomes. Visit them at Ethos Event Collective to learn more and schedule a meeting with their team. They throw great events, meetings, dare I say, parties. Paul, are we allowed to say party on WCPT if we're not talking about a political party? Is that okay? Okay, thank you. Just want to get clearance for that. Paul's in the studio with us today. Henry is he getting a shampoo and a?
I think he's rocking and rolling tonight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think he has a show with his band.
Where at? Can we plug this?
I have no idea.
Henry, who's usually in the studio with us as our on-air producer, has a show tonight. He's playing in a garage somewhere on the north side. We don't know where. Henry, have a great show. We're thinking about you. And if you want to learn more about Henry, you can go to henrywiththegreathair.org. He is a nonprofit, and he does accept in-kind contributions of hair styling products. Also happening over here with Clapper Action, we're a 27-year-old nonprofit, and our mission is to build knowledge, empathy, dialogue, and action around our most critical social issues. And we do that by producing live theater, film, and now radio that leverages the power of storytelling and community to cultivate positive social change. And I got to do a quick kind of lifetime moment brag. Our feature film of Trial in the Delta, the murder of Emmett Till, the film of the stage performance of the adaptation of the missing trial transcript, was named a finalist for a Silver Gavel Award from the American Bar Association for outstanding contribution to the American public's understanding of law and the legal system, which is great. There's one other finalist or nominee in the drama and literature category. And that is Killers of the Flower Moon by Martin Scorsese, featuring Leonardo DiCaprio. And, you know, it's a David and Goliath kind of thing right here. We'll see. I think we got a shot to take down Scorsese and DiCaprio. And from a budgetary standpoint, you know, they're outpowering us about 100,000 to one, probably. So that's pretty cool. I have a fantasy that Scorsese, like, gets something emailed to him from one of his many, many team members. And like, Martin, congrats. We got we named a finalist for a Silver Gavel Award. And he clicks on the link and he scrolls down and he says, Trial in the Delta. What is that? This collaboration. Martin, if you are listening, I have a couple pitches for you, or you can just figure out how to get us $10 million and we'll go away. But I would much rather work with you. So that happened. Also, if you didn't catch it, we did announce we are producing La Havana Madrid by Sandra Delgado with Teatro Vista at the Pritzker Pavilion on August 23rd. Free show, a chance to enjoy this amazing piece of theater that excavated a once forgotten Latino salsa club in Lakeview that was a refuge for Latine immigrants in the 60s. There'll be a live band led by Roberto Carpaccio Marin with the fierce Carol McPherson on trombone, and directed by Cheryl Lynn Bruce. So it's going to be a night not to miss, part of the 20th anniversary events for Millennium Park. Millennium Park started 20 years ago. That was a quick 20 years. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, very quick.
Don't you remember how everybody was so upset that it went so over budget and it was so late, and everybody was like upset that Daly did this?
I never really followed it because I was kind of getting into like college around the time that it opened.
I was just coming out of college when it opened, and it was like everybody was complaining about the Frank Gehry that looked like crinkled paper and the Soldier Field that looked like the spaceship landed in the mother field. And Daly did just kind of do whatever he wanted and went like $500 million over budget. But we got Millennium Park out of it.
Mm-hmm.
The Bean. And The Bean got a bad reception.
Yeah.
The Bean was ahead of its time. Anish Kapoor.
Wait, doesn't the Frank Gehry, the Pritzker Pavilion, isn't it the way it's designed? It's supposed to kind of amplify the sound to the back of the lawn?
Sure looks like it.
Yeah.
And they have that ribbed structure. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, August 23rd, come on out. Bring a picnic basket and a blanket and get ready for some really important stories about Latine people coming in here and making this their home in the 60s and becoming a big part of the fabric of Chicago. So we're super excited about that. And we got Priya Shaw is going to be joining the show on April 6th. David Dismalchian, whose new film is out right now. What's it called? Late Night. What is it called? I'm looking. Late Night with the Devil. David will be joining us. Go check out Late Night with the Devil. It's running in theaters right now. David went to DePaul Theater School, and he dropped out of school because he was addicted to drugs and he wasn't doing well. And his first show back was with Collaboration in the Sketchbook Festival. And he's just one of the nicest most successful guys. One day he'll be up there holding one of those little Oscar statuettes, and because he's hypnotizing the whole country at one time. It's really cool. But my dear friend, he'll be joining us April 13th, and then lining up the 420 show. And we're going to have a 420 at 420. Now, Paul, are we allowed to talk about cannabis on the show?
You know, no one ever told me. I don't think you can sell it, basically. You can't, like, advertise for it, but I think you can talk about it.
Well, that's
good. Hey, I'm not management for WCPT, so just disclaimer right now.
I don't sell it, so we're good there. I only smoke it.
Okay.
And can we smoke in the studio?
No comment. Right. And once again, I'm not the management of WCPT.
So if we do it, it happens Snoop Dogg style. I mean, I'm Anthony Mosley. What are they going to do?
No, don't do it.
No, we wouldn't do that.
Don't make me come over there.
We wouldn't do that. But in about 1995, the spring of 95, I was a senior at Notre Dame. I came to Chicago. It happened to be April 20th, and they were throwing a big party on the hill over on Montrose. That used to be this place where people would go on April 20th. And I was like, wow, this is wild. And here we are. You know, Pete Tosh was so far ahead of his time, you know, legalize it. And so that's what's coming up on the show. Pretty exciting, huh? Also, Rachelle Zola, advocate, storyteller, and facilitator for racial equity. Rachelle is a lifelong advocate, from working with children with special needs and their families to her current work for racial equity. She's captured national attention and continues to make waves. In 2021, Rachelle garnered recognition for a 40-day hunger strike demanding Congress pass H.R. 40, commissioned to study and develop reparation proposals for African Americans Act. Today, actually Tuesday.
A week from Tuesday.
Thank you. I don't know what week it is. A week from Tuesday, she will begin her 754-mile pilgrimage for racial equity, walking on foot along the route from Chicago to Montgomery. Rachelle will perform her one-woman show, Late, A Love Story, which vulnerably reveals stories from her own life and 10 of her friends, many of which are steeped in the devastating legacy of racism in America. Driven by love and reverence for those reshaping her perspective, Rachelle invites communities along her route to join in conversation, reflection, and solidarity. For those interested in hosting a performance or walking alongside her, mayors, civic groups, universities, churches, and community centers, please contact Rachelle directly at 720-609-9069. That's your cell phone?
That's my cell phone.
Can they text you too?
Yes, they can.
You can also text her at 720-609-9069. If you want, I mean, this woman is the new Forrest Gump for peace. She inspires communities to confront injustices and reimagine the world as a place where equity for all is inherently honored, lived by, and celebrated. Rachelle, welcome to Collab Action Radio.
Oh, Anthony, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This is amazing.
You're amazing.
Thanks.
You're walking to Montgomery.
I'm walking to Montgomery.
Now, Rachelle, can I ask you, I mean, let's just say this. I'm 50. My knees has been bugging me for the last 4 or 5 weeks. And I'm a walker. I have a dog. I was doing 100 miles a month during the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
I'm a little cherub-esque. I thought about maybe I'll go do a couple hundred miles with Rachelle. And then my knee said, nope.
Yeah.
And you're in the second half of your life.
I'm 75. We can name it. I'm going to be 76 in May, so I'll be walking most of it as a 76-year-old white woman.
So why are you doing this thing?
I'm supposed to use this white body. It's really that simple. That's why people ask me why I did the hunger strike. It was really the same thing. It came from, it's not enough for me personally, to just use my voice. I have to physically use this white body. Black people have been, well, they haven't been using it. They've been abused and traumatized because of the color of their skin. And for me, I don't know. It's just who I am, Anthony. It really is that simple for me.
Well, what's your origin story? What happened to you before the age of 10 that set you on this path or along the way?
It's interesting that you say that. I'm a circle keeper, and I did a trainings to be a circle keeper. And in one of the trainings, the woman asked, as we went around in a circle, she said, "What would you tell your 10-year-old, you know, if you had something to say?" And it was interesting. It hit me so hard. When it came around, I would tell her she's going to be okay. You know, I came from an abusive home. But the part that really resonates with me was that I have a brother who's 6 years younger than I am, Michael, who has cognitive disabilities. And I became an immediate advocate for him. My mom was an advocate for him. I watched her. And so I think that's just part of, that's definitely a part of who I am. I'm an advocate.
So when did you say, there's something wrong with the way the system has been designed?
Well, here's the thing. I went through most of my life not paying attention. I say that right in my play. You know, it's a tribute. Well, it's a tribute to the black community in Chicago and beyond. And I'll tell you, these are my words, and I talk about the fact that so many people have deemed them as invisible, dismissed them, or hate them because of the color of their skin. I never even considered them. I didn't consider their lives. I didn't consider the depth of the harm and trauma every day. And that's not easy to admit as many times as I share that. And it's necessary. So that's why I'm here. That's why I'm doing this. That's why I'm walking. Because there are many people who haven't heard the stories that I've been honored to hear.
What stories?
So I got here, and I get callings. And that's how I land up in Chicago. I came here in August of 2019, I'd never been to Chicago. I didn't know anyone in Chicago. And it's like, you're supposed to go to Chicago. And my friend's like, what? I was like, I don't know. And all I knew was that I was supposed to be engaged in the black and brown community. And I ultimately was drawn to the black community.
Was there I would say that's intuition. And intuition is very, very important.
Yeah, it was very strong. So I could have denied it.
Was there any hint of, or is there anything that you experienced or heard or saw that might have planted a seed to either come to Chicago or come to bring love to non-white people?
Well, I've traveled, but it feels like I live in a cave half the time. I lived in Jordan. At 59, I joined the Peace Corps. In 2016, 2017, I went to Ecuador and worked with children that were basically in a children's home, an orphanage. They were taken out of their homes for a particular reason, or they really didn't have any more family. So I've always had this piece of me in there. I lived in Mexico, and my background is special education, and so I would work with, well, one child in particular. She was 15. She had brain injury. And I worked with her, and I was teaching her actually how to read. So there's always been a piece of me always I've worked with families with children with special needs.
So you derive purpose from service.
Absolutely. And it just came so naturally.
And had you ever been to Chicago before?
No. No, I'd never been to Chicago. I lived in New York. That's where I grew up. That's the accent.
And where?
Born in Brooklyn and raised on Long Island. And then I went to school in Buffalo. I met my husband, who I was married to 40 years. We're divorced. So met him at going cross country to Colorado, met him in a bar. The rest is history.
What does he think about this walk?
Well, he's a former husband.
Yeah.
So with,
you're not talking.
We do talk. No, we do talk. It scares the heck out of him.
Yeah.
It scares the heck out of him, you know. I mean, he sees it as putting my life at risk, you know.
And you are.
And
you are putting your life at risk, but we put our life at risk every time we walk out of our house.
And that's what I tell people, you know. That's what I tell people when I did the hunger strike. People are going to kidnap me. You're going to die.
So you did a hunger strike.
I did a hunger strike.
Did you gain any of the weight back?
Oh, yeah, I did.
You did 40 days and 40 nights.
I did.
Talk about that.
How that came about, well, I got here, like I said, in August of 2019. By March 2020, we were shut down. But before that, I went to every workshop, training, symposium. I mean, I literally, the day I got here in North Lawndale, I went, it was the National Night Out, which they do every year with the police and the community. And the place I was staying, I was renting a room, and I asked the woman, where can I eat? And she said, this is a food desert, which I had, again, where I came from, we didn't talk about food deserts. And I said, well, I need to move. And I walked down Ogden, District 10. They had an event for that very thing, and they had hot dogs, so I got to eat. And in that process, I met people, and they asked me what I'm doing there. And I said, I'm just supposed to be here. So they invited me to their church. They invited me to a community meeting. I went to the Northland Restorative Justice Community Court, where I met lots of people who I'm still in touch with. So those few months really guided the next 4 years. And I forget the question you asked me.
What was about the...
the hunger strike.
Yeah.
So, because we were... So I started a Zoom call with these people that I was meeting, and one of the men just started to talk to me. He's in his 60s, and he said, Rochelle, I never thought I'd talk about reparations. And so I started to investigate, what is reparations? What is it about? And we did a writing campaign to the congresspeople. It's like, you need to do this, because it's been over 30 years sitting there. The HR 40 has been sitting there, Anthony, for over 30 years. And so, again, it was like, I need to show, I wanted to show white people, whatever I do, this is for white people. It's like, pay attention. I haven't paid attention. I arrived here in 71, at age 71.
Yeah. And it's never too late to start investing your time to do the work to start to chip away at our privilege, which is another word for blind spots, which is another word for ignorance. And it's okay. We're all born 100% ignorant, and we slowly, through our lived experiences and the education that is invested into us, we start to remove those blind spots. But we'll never really know what it's like to be a black person. But we can start to try to understand the history of colonization, classism, and racism, how it shows up in Chicago via segregation, redlining, intentional, systemic design of who gets to buy real estate and who doesn't, who gets to have great schools in their neighborhood and who doesn't, who has grocery stores and pharmacies and trees and who doesn't, who has potholes and who has houses that have little red X's on them that were put on them 10 years ago with federal money to make them known to be unsafe. And those houses, not only have they just sat there, they've dragged down the real estate of the whole block. There's so much into it. You know, I mean, Chicago in 1920s, we had the largest Ku Klux Klan membership in the country, here in the Windy City. If you're a white person and you're listening to this and you're getting, you know, you're getting a little upset just hearing us talk like this, maybe that's a little bit of, that's a signal for you. That's that fragility is a little leftover racism or implicit bias that you have, and it's okay. I have it too, and I'm still working on it, and so does Rochelle. We're never going to get at all of it, but the way things are set up is ridiculous. It's not right, and everybody knows it. And until we move beyond the categories that have separated us in the U.S. Census and just become one city, one country, one people, we're going to still need people like Rochelle to walk 754 miles at 75 years old to bring attention to racial equity. She's been on NBC Chicago this week, Austin Weekly. She's now on Collaboration Radio. Every one person that just hears of this astounding, dare I say, I don't want to offend you, but, you know, you may say you're a dreamer. I mean, this is going to be the walk of your life. So let's April 2nd, you leave from the wonderful Theater Y in North Lawndale. People can come and see you off and walk with you.
Please walk with me, please. And, you know, all that Anthony said, I want to share what made the difference for me. Because you've heard, I've traveled, right? But it took me coming to Chicago to learn about my own country. And it was a very deliberate act. Like I said, I walked into North Lawndale, which is a black community, and I lived in Little Village. And what I got, because people would say to me, didn't you know there was prejudice? It's like, yeah, I did. You know, have you heard anything over these 70 years? I did. And what I got, though, and I'm asking everyone who's white to look at this. So Jane Elliott, if you've heard of her, if you don't, please look her up. She's this woman. She's older than I am. She asked the question in her workshops. I haven't been to a workshop, but I've seen her videos and I learned about it a long time ago. She said, for all of you that want to be treated as a black person, stand up now. No one stands up. So she says, you must have heard the question incorrectly. Please stand up now. So her next comment is, well, if you know that they're not treated well, and you don't want to be treated that way, why are you willing to have that happen? So when I look at that, I look at myself, and I see something on the television, you hear something, but until now, Anthony, I really wasn't thinking about every single day. And that's what's made the difference for me and why each of us needs to participate. For that person who shakes their head, anytime I mention it to a black person, when they go into a restaurant, they're ignored, they're invisible. I walk into a restaurant and someone puts down a glass of water immediately. And every time there's a black person just shaking their head. They go into a store and they are followed around. I'm never followed around. It doesn't matter how grungy I look, how dirty I am. It doesn't matter. I don't get followed around. They get followed around. So that's, I think, what I'm bringing, because there's a lot of people out there, Tim Weiss, Robin DiAngelo, you know, talking about the fragility. But I've been so honored and blessed. I don't even know the word, humbled for sure, because I kept showing up and people kept asking me, literally, they were asking each other, actually, who is this white woman and why is she here? And I didn't know. All I knew was that I was supposed to listen. And they trusted it. I have heard more stories that they say, we haven't told anyone this. So I got a glimpse into a world that I never thought about, literally never thought about. You know, the person, the young man in his 30s who says to me, we're talking about waking and sleeping, and he says, you know that period of time when between sleep and awake and all is well in the world? And the next moment, my next thought is, I'm a danger to the world. The world sees me as dangerous. that changes me. I hope that changes you, who's ever listening, because I never looked at what is it like the minute they walk out of the house, or even before they walk out of the house. You know, a friend who's telling me that before he gets in the car, he has to put his locks behind him because he knows he's going to get stopped. And he's in his 30s, and my friend, and these are friends. They call me friend. They call me sister, who says at 80, just recently, he's driving down the street in his car. He sees a motorcycle approaching. He doesn't know if there's a police officer or just regular person. And he automatically slows down, even though he's already doing the speed limit. So that for me has just changed my world because, like I said, I wasn't thinking about what does that mean? What does systemic racism mean? So that's the systemic piece that people want to say, there's nothing systemic, you know, it's just individual. It's just not common. That's not happening anymore. Things are better. I mean, I'm talking to people that are 16 years old and it's not better. She just walked into a store recently and they asked her to open her bag.
Yeah, and you can't just wave a wand and have it go away, which is why the case for reparations is made. And it doesn't have to mean you just give everybody a big check, you know, it could come in the form of tax credits. There's different, or it could come in a matching 401k from the federal government. So April 2nd. Theater Y, 9:30. You're inviting people to join you there. There'll be a little ceremony.
There'll be a little breakfast, a little ceremony, people speaking. And
coffee?
Then
will there be some coffee?
I'm sure there'll be coffee.
There better be coffee. And then off you go.
10:45. That's the plan. Going down Cermak. That's where the theater is. And then going south on Kedzie. Because I won't even leave Chicago for two or three days.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
only going 10 miles a day. So if you want to join me, it's not like I've gone too far. So
if
get in your car.
People want to follow you while you're walking and see where you're at, will you have a website going for this?
There's a website.
Oh, there is. What's the website?
So we've just changed the name. So it's late.love.
Late.love. So if you go to late.love,
that's right.
You'll be able to see where Rochelle is. Will we be able to see your upcoming stops along the way?
We will.
And people can come and see you at the RV if they want at night. Don't come too late. She has an RV and a driver who will be going with her. And so she will have a place to sleep. And we'll follow you along the way. I hope you can call in.
Yes.
Why don't we have you call in on the first Saturday of every month?
Okay.
So we'll have you call in May, and then June,
and then July,
and then July. So when are you going to get?
And then August.
When are you going to get there in Montgomery?
September 15th.
September 15th.
So 6 months.
Sending press releases along the way to local media.
The local media, that's exactly right. I mean, we want, you know, the idea is this is just the beginning. I want really people like me. I never in the play mentioned because there isn't any need to. This is not about shame, blame, guilt. You have to be really clear about that because people say, I don't want to guilt me. I don't want you to guilt my kids. This is not about that. This is about I'll speak for myself, did not pay attention. And now it's like, how did we not pay attention? I went to DePaul University the other day and spoke at a class. And I asked a 19-year-old, I said, what did you learn about slavery? Well, they're learning the same thing I did. I'm 75. All they learned was, you know, that there was rape and there was torture. Not only, but I'm telling you, you know, that's the inhumanity of it, right? What I wasn't thinking about, and if we thought about it, we wouldn't be in this state. The idea that why of slavery, the intentional and deliberate enslavement of a people, identifiable skills to grow an economic empire. So we grew an economic empire in the backs of African Americans by their free forced labor, right? And they've been denied the wealth they created. So that's a question we've never asked. I mean, I didn't hear that. In college, I didn't hear that. I'm not hearing the kids now are starting to hear that. So when you talk about reparations, they're owed a huge debt. And it's not, you know, to say, well, I didn't own a slave. No, you didn't. But then the Black Codes and the Jim Crow laws and the GI Bill, that denied them. It's interesting when you look at it, it's like, well, how come they were denied if you understand the World War II GI Bill was a fabulous bill, and it basically built the white middle class. So here was the interesting thing when I looked into it. So you have to understand, I started, met the people, and then I read the books. It wasn't the other way around, which most people do. It was like, oh, I better find out. I better re-educate myself. So it wasn't, they weren't denied explicitly in the language. What it allowed, Anthony, was that the individual states could still enforce racial segregation, which you talked about at the beginning of the show. So, you know, millions of Black people who had served our country were denied housing, bank loans, education, which has further grown the generational wealth gap. It was very intentional.
I mean, in a lot of our universities were built by slaves.
Yes.
Many of our universities in Chicago, some of our most prestigious universities. And there's so much to unravel, and it won't do the work by itself. But yet, at the same time, bringing equity citywide is the most critical thing for our future. The education of all of our children, the health care and the mental health and the support for all of our people. If you would like to join the conversation and you have something to say or share, give us a call right now at 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278. Today's show on Collaboration Radio here on WCPT is not for Black and brown people, though we're happy to have you. And we would love you to call in, too, because you could probably teach us something, and we would love to welcome you to the show. But this show is, this is the show for white people. And if you have had a little inkling that maybe you could be more involved, more a part of the solution, that you could be more connected to your humanity, take this as a sign. This is a signal. Rochelle is walking to Montgomery, Alabama, 754 miles to draw attention to racial inequity. And she got our attention. So she's here. She has these wavelengths. She has our podcast. And we hope that if you're listening, and this is touching you at all, that you will figure out, what do you have that you can contribute? It's either going to be time, money, or cupcakes. If you got time, pick an organization in the city that aligns with your values and that you like what they're doing, and donate your time to them on a consistent basis for the next decade. If you don't have time because you're so busy with the kids and the job and the parents and the things, well, then just give that organization $10 a month for the rest of your life and talk about them, not just on social media, but at the tables you sit at, and learn from their work and be a mouthpiece and an ambassador. And if you don't have time and money, but you got a way of getting some good cupcakes, bring that organization cupcakes, because they all need in-kind contributions, be it services, cookies and cupcakes, or, you know, transportation.
I want to add something.
Of course.
For that. Thank you. People ask me, how do I start a conversation? That's been something that they've always asked me on a Zoom call, in person. The other day I was speaking to some people. And what I have learned is, if you meeting someone, you just say to them, what would you like me to know about you? And people share. people have stories and they want to know that they're being heard. It's really that simple. And you say, well, I'm shy. And if you can stretch yourself a little bit, you will be amazed what comes out of people. Because just look them in the eye and you just sit there. You don't have to say anything. You can't make anything better at that moment. But all they want is to be heard. And that's what I am. I've been a witness to so many people. They'll say all the time. I had a man, he was 38. He said, I can't believe I'm talking to an older white woman. I didn't think she had anything to offer me. And what I had to offer him was listening. He was the first person who called me, referred to me as an oppressor. I have to tell you, I felt sick immediately. And I kept listening. I didn't budge. And that leave an impression on him? Yeah, it's like, okay. She's willing to hear.
This is a non-white man that called
you. This is a black 38-year-old man. When I first got here, I met him, well, probably the same time as Dr. Marcus Robinson. I went to the Restorative Justice Community Court, and I met this man. And I said, hey, you want to meet? You know, and we did, and that's, you know, that's what he said.
And he said, you're an oppressor.
Yeah.
And then what'd he say?
I think, well, what he said then, he started sharing about his life. He started to share about his own kid. He started to share about, and I can share all these stories. I've been given permission, so I'm not sharing anything out of hand. So as a black man, he
is this in the play?
This story is not, no. And what he shared next was he had a little girl, 5 years old, just going into kindergarten. And he's a big guy. And he said, I'm so afraid if I open my mouth at these parent-teacher orientation that they're going to see me as an angry black man, not just a dad. Just a dad. And that's what he worries about.
So was he wrong in calling you an oppressor? Or aren't we implicitly part of an oppressive class?
Oh, yes. You know, I put on my TikTok the other day. I said, I live in a, what did I say? What's the word I used at the time? A racist society. That's what I said. Because I do. And so I'm part of it, right? I didn't even pay attention to it. I went to, after George Floyd was killed, I went to the protest and they have the signs up, silence is violence. I got that. I wasn't even realizing I was silent. But now I do. So you ask people, say to me, Michelle, I can't do what you do. And I'm not asking you to. I'm asking you to show up the way you can show up. And people appreciate that. So that means if your kid or your grandkids in school, what's the curriculum? If you're involved in your library, what's going on there? If you're involved with your place of worship, what's going on there? Have the conversation, because it does start. But you need to have someone who can actually talk about the real lived experience. Otherwise, white people are just talking to white people and they think everything's okay, so many. It's like, oh no, things are better. You know, there's Oprah out there. We had a black president. And it's so easy to assume. Oh, so I'll tell you the story. So I went to a workshop many years ago and there's a circle and it was broken into three areas. I said, you know what you know. I know how to speak English. I know what I don't know. I don't speak Italian. I don't know what I don't know. Okay, you got that one? I don't know what I don't know. But I've had another one. I thought I knew and I didn't have a clue. You know? And that's the assumptions you make. You think it's okay. And at the show, that's one of the big things that white people come up to me and say, how did I not know? And then people are like, what do you mean you didn't know? And then I have black friends who say, of course you didn't know. So, you know, there's other, you know, it's like, and I said, that's why, I can't use that. That's why I'm so angry in the moment. It's like, how did I not know? How did I not know? Not to know, not enough to participate. So even when you say, you know, there's things that, we all have things going on in our lives. You know, we're very busy. We each have even our own trauma. I grew up my own trauma. But what I know, Anthony, is that each of us has to participate so that racism disappears. We each have to, whatever that looks like you said, big or small, we can't depend on our leaders. We can't pretend, oh, our neighbor does that down the road.
Yeah. And it's a relay race. and we might not make it to the finish line, but we have the baton, we need to run as hard as we can.
That urgency.
Yeah. And and if you are a person who is motivated by self-interest, guess what? It's in your self-interest to support communities that have been overlooked, oppressed, and not equitably given opportunities for education, jobs, real estate, wealth, because it will make your world and your neighborhood and your future city a better place.
Yes.
So, and as Mayor Brandon Johnson says, if you don't know, now you know. Rochelle Zola is going to Alabama Montgomery. So why? And by the way, Mayor Johnson, in addition to the outstanding, longstanding invitation to join us here on Clever Action Radio to talk about art, activism, and social change, we also want to invite you to come to Rochelle's launch party and breakfast on April 2nd at Theater Y. We'd love to have you or some of your administration there join us. You know, Mayor Johnson used to have a show here on WCPT. He used to sit in this very room.
I didn't know that.
Before he was mayor.
Right.
And there'll be other people that'll come and sit in this studio one day, and they'll say, that woman that walked to Alabama, Rochelle, she was in that studio at 5475
Thank
North
you.
Milwaukee. Why Montgomery?
Oh, after the hunger strike, I knew I was supposed to go south. So I went down to Atlanta, Georgia, and then a connection, somebody I knew said, you know, I know people down in Montgomery, Alabama. Of course, if you don't know about Montgomery, Alabama, you have to go to the Legacy Museum, you know, and I'm going to read this correctly because I know it as the Lynching Museum, but it's called the National Memorial for Peace and Justice. And Brian Stevenson has done a lot of work down there. It's has the Rosa Parks have museums down there. It has so much history. Of course, the Selma to Montgomery March. So the significance of that is why. That's a pull for me. It's a definite pull for me. I've been down there three times now. And, yeah, I don't have any, you know, it's so personal. It's like there's a piece of me that knows that place.
Yeah.
There's so much history.
You're drawn there.
I'm drawn there.
I want to just highlight that you're one of the few people that can say, quote, after the hunger strike, I. So you're a bad mama jama is what you are. And, you know, isn't it interesting that in the South, they will build a monument, memorial, museum to make sure we don't forget about lynching, racism, the slave trade. But in Chicago, there's nowhere to go. Covert racism is as bad or worse, ultimately, than overt racism. Because when you hide something, it will never go away.
Well, there's the museum, the memorial, the Martin Luther King Living Memorial in Marquis Park that's what it's now called. But that was in 1966, and why that was built. Do you know the history of that? I just learned about that Martin Luther King was there. And there were many white protesters, and he was actually hit by a rock that brought him down to his knees.
Yeah. And he said, I've marched in Alabama and Mississippi, and I have never seen the hatred and vitriol I saw today. And white men in white tank tops ran down the street several blocks with baseball bats, shovels, and pitchforks in their hands to go accost the leader of the peaceful civil rights movement.
Yes. Yeah, it's astounding. And, you know, we, I don't know, it, what he says about that also is that we think the South is the bad guys. You know, they're the ones that started the Civil War and, you know, they're, you know, racist. But the thing is, the racism is up here, too. But they didn't have to deal with it until black people, the migration, right? This mass migration. And then all of a sudden, no, they're not so nice either. You know, so we've had to deal with a very ugly history, and we have to deal with it. But we need to, I mean, that's why I'm doing this. It's like, again, it's like, this is the truth, and people are still paying the price over and over.
We have to know the history. I don't know if deal is the word. Respectfully, of course. I've been thinking about present tense a lot. You know, there is no past. It doesn't exist. All that existed was a past present. And we will have future presents as well. But none of them exist. All that exists is this moment that we are in right now. And yes, we want to make change. And we want to learn and not repeat our history or our past presents. But we have to act in the now.
Yeah.
We have to do, we have to slow down and listen. Turn our brains off and listen to our heart and our stomach. And that intuitive voice brought you to Chicago in 2019, guided you to a hunger strike for reparations, and now is going to be driving you and your feet and your heart and stomach south. So before we wrap up the show, what are your thoughts about what you want people to think of while you're walking?
I want them to see what they can do in their lives. I really want them to say, how can I participate? That's the biggest ask I have. How are you going to show up in your world? And it may mean, you know what, talking to your brother, your relative who doesn't believe like you do, and somehow have a conversation about, hey, this is the truth. This is happening today. This is happening today. And I love that, Anthony.
And we love black culture, especially in Chicago. Music.
So I will go there because I...
Only have about a minute
left. Okay, so Englewood. I was in Englewood. I'm in Austin. I'm in North Lawndale. And they have fabulous music there. They have dance. They have art. Please, I hear so many times, how do you go there? How do I go there? These amazing people with amazing talents. So how don't we see the richness, the beauty, the talent, you know, and all the possibilities?
I'm talking about Englewood all the time. I've had a bunch of guests from Englewood.
Please, yes. Go see another piece of it, of Chicago, which is amazing, so rich.
If you want to get in contact with Rochelle, you can hit her up at 720-609-9069. Walk with her. Send her messages of hope. She's on the Facebook. Or you can go to love.late. And
there's a place for you to sign up for emails. There's a place to contact me. Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I'm on all of it.
Have a great
YouTube.
Have a great walk.
Thank you.
And tell everybody that Chicago says hello. Represent.
I will.
Thank you for joining us on Collaboration Radio.
Anthony, thank you. This has been a pleasure, an honor. Thank you.